Well, Lauren, it truly is a pleasure to have you join us here on Score Notes. How is everything going today?
Everything's very good, thank you very much, Tom. Lovely talking to you.
Likewise, Lauren. And I'd love to dive right in to Ironclad, a recent project of yours. Please tell us a bit about the background behind the film itself and how you first joined the project.
Well, I got contacted through mutual friends. I got contacted through music supervisor Bob Baddeley and the director, Jonathan English. We had slowly sent some of my music too, and a friend of mine, Aliga, had already sent, I think, an old reel of mine that was very old. Jonathan liked it. It was nothing like the music that I think he was intending to be in the film, but for some reason he liked what he heard. And then I decided to fly over to London for a meeting with him, and I saw some of the footage, and he said to me how, you know, the last thing he wanted was your quintessential big Hollywood score. And I thought, well, that's going to be a challenge, especially with the subject matter and action. I thought that would be quite interesting. Because I know how you could easily do it. And thankfully, Jonathan said that's what he did not want. So I left London, actually, after watching about 10 minutes of it. I came back to LA and I just went and I started writing scenes for it. And he still hadn't decided who the composer was. I think there's a couple of other composers pitching for it. And they started taking some of my music, putting it to their edit, and then we kind of then started. So it was a long process before I even got the gig.
Yeah, a lot of work ramping up to it, it sounds like. And, you know, the era that it's set in, we're talking 13th century. As a composer, what's it like to dive into a historical period of time like that?
Oh, horrible. Because I think all the music, you know, if you look at it properly, all the music is very linear, and it's not. You have to go two ways. You either make something really authentic that then us, as the listener and the viewer, looks at it, and we've been brainwashed in thinking what that music actually is from that period of time. And, you know, the big choirs playing music is not what that period of time was. It was influenced with lots of different colours, you know, but because of the Crusades. And that was the main thing, and I thought, well, I can start introducing Middle Eastern influences to it, because they were introduced to it. Their food was being influenced by it, and the knights that had returned would have witnessed music like that. So I just thought, well, why don't we try to put some different colours in it and not make it? And it helped it stop from being, you know, quintessential Hollywood music, I thought.
Your score sets a very precise mood and tone for the picture. And at what point were you comfortable that you locked in on the type of style that this film required? Is that early on? Is that halfway through?
I think early on we had always discussed. I think in those original suites I had done, I had the King John theme pretty sorted. Unfortunately, as a demo, instead of Paul Brady, the singer, who did a fantastic job on it, it was me doing a very bad singing voice that was not ever meant to anybody ever to hear again. But the thing is that it was, I thought, you know, King John's character, a lot of it is based about the heritage of being a king and the subject matter of the fact that you're reared to be a king, you know, from a child to a man. Having the male voice, and it was just to make it more personal, because even though he is kind of the villain in it, well, he's not kind of, he is the villain, it was good to try to make a bit of emotion for him. And things like the violin, you know, trying to influence Celtic influences into it, because musically, music from Scotland then would have been, people would have been travelling around Britain, so they would have heard music like that. So I think taking bit of all the best and putting it together, I think it was fun then. And I think as soon as we went too grand, we did try to step back. But I think sometimes we had to, with the big action scenes, go a bit crazy.
How difficult is it to transition from, you know, highly commercial projects like a Megamind, you know, into the battlefields of Ironclad? How kind of spry do you have to remain creatively to make those kind of leaps?
Well, as soon as I've figured it out, then I think I will then know, because I think I try to look at it as it's even though it's a different period of time, if it's 12-15 and the subject matter is love, it's got to be the same as when it's 2011 and it's Vince Vaughn and Chicago. So I think it's a case of the intentions are always the same, but I try to look at it and just kind of, well, the orchestration's going to be different, because I think that if we can, we've always got to express the same emotions, love, happiness and sorrow. And I think no matter if it's a cartoon character in Megamind, when Megamind's leaving her and walking away, you've got to express emotions and get and pull those heartstrings. And it's the same as if it's 12-15 and it's Rochester Castle and somebody's dying. I think I like to look at it as the same emotions but a different color.
True, because the audience, they're there to live the tale through whatever characters may be presented to them on the screen. So that's a great approach you're taking.
Yeah, because the thing is that it's you can be trying to be avant-garde with some of these things, but I just think if we can just look at it and kind of go, this is love, this is loss, this is sorrow, and no matter if it's modern day or sad, this is what we think, you know. Sad music now is far different than what it was 100 years ago. So we've got to kind of at least look at the big picture and kind of say, well, the viewer, we've got to express to them what that emotion is. So I think that in Megamind, when it was a sad moment, it was not treated any different than if it was a film compared to an animation. It was basically emotionally, what are we trying to say, and respect the audience.
And another beast altogether is the platform of video games, in which you've been recently been inaugurated into with a couple of recent scores. And how does that enter into the picture of what we just discussed?
Well, the funny thing is that video games, coming from somebody that has never played video games, it was a very quick learning for me, especially the first game was Modern Warfare. The music is so blooming important. It's like, when you talk to gamers, this is another world, and the music has got to get them into it. And if they're a soldier, they sit there, and this experience to them is not like watching a film. They're in the film. And I'd never realized that until I kind of finally started having a go on a game, and unfortunately I get too addicted to these things, so I had to stop. But I saw how important the structure of it was. You have cinematic scenes in it, and they're just as impressive as any big blockbuster film that you watch. You know, it runs for 2 minutes. It's telling a story. There's plot development. There's character analysis. You know, it's just as important as a film. And it's amazing when you do speak to people and they kind of they talk about playing a game with music without. And I know I read something interesting about somebody saying that there was no difference. But to proper gamers, there's a big difference. It's absolutely, they become that character.
Absolutely. It immerses one into the actual gameplay, into the universe in which they're delving into. And I'd even say that music in video games is probably even more critical to the experience than in film.
Oh, absolutely, because it's got to be universal. What it's got to do, it's got to be universal, so everybody who's playing feels the same thing. There's no time to sit back and start having a deep complete conversation about what one was feeling when this character said something. It's got to be straightforward, and this is it. This is what's going on with this gameplay. And a lot of the time, there's more and more cinematics now. There's the gameplay music that will get looped, but there's more set scenes that you would see in a feature film now. So game music is not what I think people used to look at it as you know, just fluff. It's legitimate pieces of music now.
Yeah, and it seems like Hans Zimmer and the team at Remote Control are becoming aware of this great creative opportunity in games. And can we expect to see more of your involvement in video games in the near future here?
I'm about to get on a plane to go to London to record one game, Spyro. So that's one project at the moment. I'm about to start on the next Assassin's Creed, and there's a couple of sequels coming up. So for the next year, I think I've got about four more game projects, and we all have a lot of fun with them. Because it's, especially with the action ones, boys get to be boys. you can do a bit of tongue-in-cheek to you know, certain 80s action films, and it's still legitimate. So it's just fun, and I think the people playing it just want fun.
Yeah, and what's more, I've noticed that kind of your cinematic theatrical sensibilities, like you've said, you've never been a gamer going into this. I think that translates through to your work, and therein adds even more depth to the game music I've heard from you thus far. So I'm definitely looking forward to your next few outings here.
Well, I think the thing is that all of this is kind of new to me because I never had a classical background musically. So, you know, I think I'm still trying to figure out what my style is, because I've got a bit, you know, I do understand some orchestrations, but I was never trained in it. I didn't get a degree in it, so it's all, I'm learning on every single project. When I did Rango the video game, you know, I learned how to write for 10 instruments. When before that, I think we got used to writing for your 50-piece orchestra. So with things like that, you learn every time. Crying with Laughter, I think it was just a guitar and some synth. And that was so hard because I realized you've got nowhere to hide with templates like that. You can't just, you know, have all the instruments playing at the same time and protect stuff. It's so much harder than you're disciplining yourself just to have a limited amount of ingredients for that cake.
So I would say, my friend, that this is on-the-job training with each project.
It is for me.
Yeah, and I think it's the case with any composer, really. I mean, if you're not learning something new from each new assignment, maybe something is not right there. Because I'm a proponent that each progressive gig makes the composer better and stronger. So that's just my personal take.
The fact is, this is a hobby. Doing music and writing music is a hobby. And if you don't find it a challenge, then you should go and get a 9-to-5 job. It doesn't make sense to me. If you're kind of like, oh, well, I've done this action scene before, reinvent it. That's why so many, you know, you look at the A-list composers, they reinvent things all the time. You don't just kind of regurgitate it.
Yeah, being static does not lend itself to get a good entertainment. It just doesn't.
Well, no. Musical evolution will not occur if we do that, because it's like what we're saying. Music, action music in the 80s, is totally different than what it is now. If you tried to take the music from Miami Vice episode and played it now, I see some of it. You would kind of say, well, that's not serious, is it? Because we've now got used to it. We look at slightly comical sometimes.
Yeah, and played tongue-in-cheek with a lot of movies these days for comedic value, for sure. So, not totally on board with that, and that's actually an energizing point of view to hear from a composer like yourself.
Good. I try to get some things right sometimes.
And just wrapping up here, I'd just like to get back to the Ironclad soundtrack. How pleased are you with the material that made it onto the soundtrack release, and what are your expectations for availability? Is it online digitally only right now, or is there other means of purchasing?
It's out in Europe, because the film got released in Europe, and then hopefully, I believe the film might be coming out in America, and if it comes out in America, then a hard copy will get released. But at the moment, it's just Amazon and iTunes. You can buy it through Verage, especially in Europe. And if the film comes out in America, then we'll release it here. But very, very, very happy. It was exciting to kind of work with all these musicians, Paul Brady and Troy, all over Europe. Where they from all their different cultures managed to kind of add a different color on top of the score, and it was, you know, even in Germany I had the band Corvus Cantus there performing on top of the score, and you know they play the weirdest instruments and percussive instruments that they make. John Kenny playing the carnax, which is an instrument that's pre-Roman, that I'd always seen photographs of, and that's what starts the first track of the score with. So it was just great to kind of find all these different new musicians that we don't normally deal with or see because of the subject matter. So I think it's, I think that's what new projects always bring, is being able to collaborate with new people.
Absolutely, and that's a great way to wrap things up. Highly recommended. The score is it's a great listen. I think you've done an excellent job, especially given the kind of challenges and hurdles a piece like this presented. So, please keep up the great work. We'll definitely be tuned in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that, and I'll speak to you soon.